Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support, and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Male Fertility Podcast. This week we are absolutely honoured to be joined by Matt. Matt, welcome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, mate, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here. And it just continues the theme of this series, really, that it shows just an incredible amount of bravery for you to be here today. And it will be so empowering for other men to hear what you have to say today. So, yeah, thank you for coming.
Yeah, no probs.
There's only one way to start, and that's by dropping the J-bomb straight away, the journey. We are trying to find away from that. It's probably going to take a whole series of like bedding it in from journey to quest. But still, journey's like an old friend, we're still going to roll with it a little bit. So, Matt, tell us about your experiences and what's brought you here today.
Yeah, so the journey's been, I think as most people have up and downs with it, and you don't ever really expect to be going through this journey. I think from a male standpoint, growing up in the generation that I have, it's obviously, it comes across like a God-given right that you should be able to have kids. There's no sort of education around how common this actually is, I found. Part of the reason why I reached out to you guys and wanted to sort of tell my story a little bit. So Katie and myself, my partner, we met 2017. Things moved pretty quickly for us. We got engaged within 6 months, moved in together within 4 months, bought a first house within 2 years and everything like that. So it was all pretty quick. And I think both of us realized at the time that we both wanted a family, you know. So it wasn't that we weren't trying, but it wasn't that we were actively trying. You know, she came off the pill, and if it happened, it happened, sort of was where we were with it for the first couple of years, until it didn't happen for a couple of years, and we were sort of like, right, well, we probably need to get checked out here. It's not going to hurt. So Katie went to the GP, and the GP sent her for the female tests and everything like that, for the ultrasounds, and all pretty in-depth and involved sort of tests. And it was only after about a year and a half of her having those tests and getting really normal results and what was expected that they went, okay, well, we'll look at your partner then. So hearing her experience, and then obviously our experience as men, which is you get a pot and you got to do your business in it. I thought that should have been where we started, I feel. But you know, I'm not a medical professional, so. So I did my business in the pot, dropped it off to the people that obviously look at it and that they analysed it. And it got to a couple of weeks and I hadn't had the results back. So I phoned my GP, and the receptionist gave me the result and said, oh, you've got a low count. So I was like, okay, cool. We can work with that. It's obviously not ideal, but it's probably lifestyle based or something along that. So I didn't feel too downhearted by it. It was only a couple of weeks later that I went to the GP about a knee issue. And I asked him about the question then, about the test. And he said, no, actually, you've got a zero count. So going from, you know, middle ground and thinking, okay, we can work with this, to all of a sudden doom and it's never going to happen. And obviously you think the worst straight away. So I sort of just, I remember the feeling going out to the car, having heard this and just feeling like I was like melting into the seat, like wilting away almost. Yeah, it wasn't the best way to find out, I don't think. So, that's where we were. But from that, we've had referrals to urology to begin with, which took about 8 to 9 months to actually have the appointment after numerous failed appointments or they'd cancelled last minute. And we went to urology only to be told that we were referred to the wrong place. Which obviously after 8-9 months is a bit of a kick in the teeth. yeah, I don't know if you guys had anything similar to like that, but it was soul crushing to be like, well, yeah, you waited all this time and sorry, you'll have to go somewhere else, you know?
Yeah, I think it's not an uncommon thing, is it, to find out that actually you're in the wrong department.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can imagine how frustrating it is, especially we talk about the waiting so much, don't we, buddy, in terms of that waiting. And then to find out you've been waiting and actually been waiting in the wrong queue. Yeah, very tough for you, mate.
Yeah, and that's a stretch even for any Brit, even though.
Yeah, absolutely. Well put, well put.
Yeah. Well, that's crazy, Matt. That echoes really scarily a very similar story to someone else we had on earlier in this series. The kind of initial results given by someone over the phone, which were not just a little bit wrong, but completely incorrect. And yeah, it's scary to think that's happening more often than we would like, and in other areas of the country as well.
Yeah, well, I think it probably comes down to a lack of awareness, maybe, of around the whole situation. You know, going into it myself, I thought I was on my own, and that nobody else had been through this, or certainly not many people have been through this. It's only when you actually start diving in deeper and listening to podcasts or talking to your friends about things and actually being open about it that you realise it's a lot more common than we first thought. Which sort of makes it a little bit easier, I guess, to know that you're not on your own, and it could be your best mate. Or you know, I think since talking about it at work and letting work know, there's like three or four other blokes in the office that have had the same sort of thing, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, there's people that I can relate with here, which makes it a lot easier for sure. Yeah, but it's spreading that education, I think, or spreading the awareness of the situation will be the only thing that will help it, I think.
Oh, you're right. You're so right. And that's, like I said at the outset, that's why I was so pleased you're here. You just mentioned something there that I want to touch upon, actually, that you've opened up at work and told other people. Like, tell us about that.
So, I mean, it got to a point where I was, due to the numerous different sort of referrals that I'm under, so I'm being looked after at, by endocrinology, based over in Luton and Dunstable. The fertility clinic, obviously, me and Katie are both being looked after them, and then also a urologist. So with three departments looking after you, obviously a lot of appointments come with that and a lot of time off work come with that. So I've been quite open and honest with them and said, look, I will need time off. And as a result, obviously, the sort of conversation grew at work, and I felt it was probably necessary to talk to some of the directors and just let them know the situation I was in. So it didn't look like I was just taking time off work all the time. There was a genuine reason behind it. So that's why I started talking about it. And to be fair, as this has developed and grown and I've become more used to it, I'm quite happy to be open about it and in order to spread the awareness, you know. So that's sort of how it went about. And it's quite liberating to hear or to have a conversation with somebody else that has the same situation or same scenario, similar scenario. Sorry. So
what was the kind of makeup of those directors? Were they like male, female mix?
So the company I work for is mainly male directed. I work in construction, so it's obviously a predominantly male environment. But even down to say the office manager who is a woman, you know, she knows about the situation. She's been hugely supportive, and it's quite refreshing to have people from both sides of obviously the gender gap or whatever that can relate or can talk openly about this.
Wow, mate, that's incredible. I there was a program on Danny Dyer did a program about masculinity, two part, I think it was on Channel 4, but he went to some construction site as part of that, and because there's a bit of an epidemic of suicide within the construction industry because it's predominantly male, and as we know, the stats for male suicide are like three times as high as female, but then within the construction industry it's even more so because of, I think, that kind of male dominated arena. So to hear you, like the fact that you're in that industry and you went and opened up. That is quite incredible. So absolutely hats off to you.
Were you nervous before you did it? Because I remember talking to my bosses, and I'm sure Sean can talk about this as well, but that first thought of, is it, you know, how are they going to take it? What's it going to be like when I actually open up about this? It's quite daunting, like the first thought of it. How did you find it? Like, did you have to kind of build yourself up, or was it a case of, well, this is where I am and I've just got to deal with it and just rolled with it?
I think with in between, obviously, first diagnosis or finding out about it and having to mention it to work, I'd managed to process the situation a little bit, which I think made it easier to talk to people. If I'm honest, the only time that I've really struggled to open up about it was to my parents when I first found out. I don't know why, because they'd had similar issues, but that was the only time that I had ever really struggled. But talking to work, it's a professional environment. They need to know because it could affect my work life, you know. So it wasn't daunting as such. I'm quite lucky in where I work, and the directors and my colleagues are all they're really nice people and understanding. So I think from there it's a safe space, you know.
That's such a good point you made there, because as adults, I'm sure it's around 80% of people facing fertility issues are in their 30s. And so you can imagine how much of any given workforce are people in their 30s.
Yeah.
And you think of then how much time a week we spend at work, whether, you know, Monday, Friday or whatever shifts, it's a lot. 40 waking hours a week is a lot. And as we know, fertility appointments of clinics are mostly open in the week. So we end up, I hid it for over a year of sick leave, annual leave, trying to change shifts around. So yeah, it's very obvious. And when you break it down, that it can have a massive impact on your work. And I just want to stay with that a minute, really, because I'm just so pleased to hear that you did that. But before you opened up, how long was it from your diagnosis to the point that you opened up at work?
It was probably about a year to 2 years, I would say. So when I first found out, I was self-employed, running my own business. Didn't really have time to process it, let alone talk about it to certain people. And also didn't have, I was my own boss, so I didn't really have to mention it to anyone. It was just, you know, I've got an appointment, I'll go. It was only from, and to be fair, probably the diagnosis was part of the downfall of me being self-employed and folding the business, essentially. I went through a pretty dark spell for that, which I guess we'll touch on a little bit later. But it was when I first joined the company that I work for now. Obviously, when you have your initiation, they ask for any medical conditions, and I openly just said, look, me and my partner are going through some fertility stuff, and I will need time off. You know, I sort of went in with an open book to it, basically. It was obviously as it develops further and you find out more, that was when I spoke to the directors to be like, look, I'm being looked after by three departments here. I'm having an appointment all the time. Just so you know, I'm not phoning in sick or going out and getting drunk the night before and trying to avoid coming in with a hangover. You know, there's a legitimate reason behind this, you know. So that was the main reason, really.
Wow. And how did that make you feel once you, like the first disclosure in the initial kind of recruitment phase, and then the second, how did that first one make you feel?
It was almost like a weight was off the mind a little bit. It's something that you worry about constantly day in, day out, and you think about all the time. But going into a new job, just to have an open slate about it and say, look, this is what the situation is, and actually have people understand and work with you on it and show a genuine interest into how it's going and how are you getting on. It's great, you know. So.
Amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing, mate. It's amazing that your employers have supported you like that from the get-go, you know?
Yeah.
As I said, me and Sean have felt that, and it makes everything so much easier, Just yeah, to kind absolutely. Of not have to hide things. I want to rewind a little bit because you were saying about how your partner had her tests. And then was it 18 months before they tested you?
Yeah, I think it was a year to a year and a half, yeah.
Yeah, that's a phenomenal amount of time, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
To think, actually, there's two sides of this coin. I should have, you know,
I did feel cast aside a little bit. Yeah, it was not cast aside, I guess, like feeling like the spoiled child or whatever, or the left out child. But, I want my test.
I want one.
Interestingly, when I eventually opened up to my parents and when they had their fertility issues, the same thing happened then. And the nurse actually said to my mum after all of the tests that she'd had, was like, "Oh, well, has your partner been tested yet?" And she's like, "No." And she's like, "Well, why not? You know, that test is so much easier than everything that you have to go through and far less invasive."
Yeah. How many years ago was that?
It must have been 35 to 40 years ago.
Yeah, and we're still doing the same.
Between my two elder sisters. Yeah, haven't learned from it, I guess.
No. Well, my next question was going to be, how did you feel, like, once they tested you? Did you feel, you've kind of already answered this, that you should have been tested, and that, did you think it made the situation worse in terms of how you felt about it? Because actually you would have been like a year down the line. It's kind of the stages of processing, isn't it? It's the first stage of that acknowledgement. But did you feel any kind of bitterness towards it, or was it the fact of actually, I'm just processing what I've been told?
I think initially I was angry about everything. Even things that were completely out of my control, like just the situation in general, I think, which is probably why I went down the road that I did go initially. But looking back at it, you know, we're 5-6 years down the line in the fertility journey, and we're getting close to hearing about what the outcome could be. But that could have been a year saved, or we could be where we want to be by now, you know. So there is a little bit of bitterness towards that. But I also, my partner works at the NHS, my sister's a doctor within the NHS, you know, I do understand that they're under a lot of strain and pressure at the moment, and mistakes do happen. So I'm taking the democratic approach to that and you know, praising the NHS opposed to shooting them down, because it's a great service that we have, and they do deserve praise, the people that work there. So
100%. My lovely wife, she works for the NHS, and I completely understand the strains and stresses they have on top of them, and targets they have to meet and everything else.
Hesitation there, Kieran, with what you were going to get put in front of wife. It was lovely. Yeah, fair one.
She is lovely. I'd be lost without her. I did a whole episode on it.
Toe that line now.
She'll listen to this.
I can validate it. I can corroborate that. She's lovely.
I was going to say? I was going to say something. Yeah, I found that for me, because I felt like I held a lot of anger in me for a long time. And I kind of have realized that holding on to that kind of anger, like many people will be that are listening to this, because I think it's a natural part of the grieving process, and whatever you want to call it. The only person it's really damaging is yourself. You know, like if you hold on to something that bitter, you just have to figure out how to work through it. And it sounds like you did, and you've made the right decision and kind of, well, it is the way it is. Let's move on. Can't change the past, that kind of mindset. It's good to hear that, you know, you're able to process that rather quickly, and at least that initial kind of bit of feeling towards things. So we got up to the fact of you, we're going through your tests, and like, what's the situation for you now? Like, from being diagnosed to now, what's happened?
So obviously I'm being looked after by endocrinology, urology and the fertility clinic. I've been on Clomid for about 3-4 months now from August, following obviously blood panels and realizing that it's my hormones are all over the place basically, or performing, that they're on the low scale basically. So testosterone was low, LH was low and FSH was low, which are the three obviously big ones. So they put me on Clomid, which within a very short space of time seemed to be working. I did have another blood panel, and testosterone is on the high end of the normal scale now. FSH is performing normally, and LH is within normal parameters but on the low end. So it does seem like Clomid is doing the job. I've got another analysis in December, which will obviously tell us if it is fully working or not. Mm-hmm. And then a potential microtesy booked in after, depending on the results from the analysis. So, which I remember when I first heard about it in the pod, I got a bit squeamish. And then when the urologist told me about it in person, I nearly passed out.
Legend.
This is one that Sean can take, because I can't comment on it. But
it's at least you're a bit more informed now, and that the thought of it is probably like one of the worst parts. Yeah, of course the recovery ain't ideal, but yeah, you're well ahead of where I was. So yeah, fair play to you.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes. I'm hoping we don't get that far, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Hopefully the analysis in December will be like, yeah, you're all good to go. But we'll see how we go. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where we end up from there.
Yeah. Have you been given any idea as to the potential cause?
Not yet. So endocrinology have been probably the biggest part of this, given that it's the endocrine system and everything like that. They basically just told me that I'll have to take TRT after our fertility journey, and I'll be on that for life basically. There's no reasoning. That they've done scans, they've scanned my pituitary glands, obviously I've had ultrasounds on testicles and everything internal. Blood panels came back irregular initially, and there's no like root cause, or I haven't been given it yet, which is it's a weird feeling, knowing that obviously something's not quite right, but we don't know why it's not quite right, and we'll give you these meds and it should fix it, but you know, we'll see how we go. It's a bit of a weird feeling.
I can imagine. I had a roughly similar situation. They had a best guess as to why. Obviously, I had a varicocele, but also I had mumps, and it kind of lent towards the mumps being the root cause. I think personally, in the end, what helped me move on from that was just deciding that no matter what it was, the result was going to be the same outcome. So holding on to that was not moving me forward anyway. And that's not to say it's like a click of the fingers thing. That takes a lot. That took me a lot of work to get to that point of acceptance of that. That you mentioned earlier, things out of your control, and that's one of them. There are things that you can control, which you are doing, and like one of those certainly is your mindset around this and what you're doing now and where you are with it. And yeah, it's quite admirable, because that's, as men, I think that's something that really is important for us, is to control what we can.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, something I do want to ask you, Matt, is obviously you're on Clomid at the moment. Do you feel better for being on it? Like, do you feel like your testosterone's higher? Do you feel better? Have you noticed changes, like just in your body, in terms of feeling better about it? And because quite often you don't know you're missing something until you have it, and then you're like, "Oh, yeah. this feels completely different."
Yeah, absolutely. It's I feel more energized, and sounds weird, but I feel like just more competitive and more like you know, if I was going to go to the gym, I could lift 100 kilo. I can't, just to clarify, but I feel like, you know, a bit more powerful, I guess, in a weird way. I didn't initially, when I first started taking it, there was highs and lows, and obviously as everything settled down a little bit, you're unregulated whilst the medication starts taking its course. So there was a time where I didn't know who I was. One day I'd be full of beans, and the next day I'd just be lowest mood possible. You know, feeling a bit depressed about life in general, but I wasn't. It was just how I was feeling at the time and the chemical imbalance in my body, I guess. It got to the point I was in a ball on the floor in tears, like literally balls of tears. And my missus came up and was like, "What's going on?" And then, you know, cut forward to 2 hours later and I'm smiling, laughing, joking. It was really up and down. But so if anybody gets put on Clomid, expect that. It's not a bad thing, because ultimately it takes you to how you should feel, or a better feeling. And it's very apparent that, well, it's made things obvious now. Like when I look back to when I was younger and fatigued all the time and had all of these like low mood periods and everything like that, it's like all of a sudden it makes sense now. And Clomid's fantastic. I mean, if I could take it for the rest of my life, I would, because I feel incredible at the moment. But hopefully, yeah, I think it's only till December, so yeah, hopefully CRT has the same result.
How long did that last, you know, that emotional little roller coaster?
It was only a couple of weeks, really. It was quite a short burst, and I think people will obviously be different based on how their body reacts to things. But we had a family gathering. I remember driving up to the house as my dad was leaving to go out to the shops, and he looked at me. He was like, "Are you okay? Like, you don't look well at all." And I felt okay. It was just a really weird sort of up and down period, but it does balance out. To anybody that will go on a similar journey, it does balance out, and it is for the better.
You're obviously under the watchful eye of the endocrinologists and like having regular blood tests and stuff, so nice one.
Were you told that he could do stuff like that to you?
I mean,
you're a bit emotional, or is it one of those things that they're like, read the leaflet? You're sat there with a mile long leaflet going, "Oh, side effects, emotional roller coaster."
I don't remember being told specifically, like, you're going to have a meltdown 1 minute and then be fine the next. But I think it was a look at the side effects on the leaflet and see what's there. But
so you've mentioned a couple of times, it's quite remarkable, really, that your parents went through this as well. Take us back to, like, firstly, have you known that your whole life? And secondly, how was it breaking the news to them that you too were going to have to go through a similar journey?
Yeah, I mean, it's mum and dad have been very open about it. I've got two older sisters, and obviously they were both planned, and I was the little surprise at the end, as everybody says. So, but in between both of my sisters, my mum was pregnant with twins and actually miscarried. So mum has been quite honest that obviously if the twins or that pregnancy did go to full term, that me and my middle sister probably wouldn't be here now, because they would have had three kids, and that's what the plan was. So it's been quite an open and honest thing from a very young age, to be fair. That happened, basically. When I initially found out, and my partner was saying, "Look, go and talk to your parents, because they've been through this, and your mum has been through this, and she can relate, and it might be good for you to talk to somebody at the time." And I don't know what it was, but I just didn't want to. I was like, "No, I don't want to talk to them. Don't want to talk to them." And then eventually, after her going on and on and on, because ultimately she knows best, that is apparent this time, I did speak to mum about it. And I think it was easier to talk to mum about it, knowing that she'd been through this. She was the one that had the fertility issues. it was easier to talk to her. And there was also an element of I feel responsible for carrying on my family name, sort of thing, and the bloodline in many ways. So for me to turn around to my dad and say, look, this might not happen now, was something I was worried about, if I'm honest. But I spoke to dad openly about it after a few beers one night, because we're an Irish family and that's how we emotionally talk when we're drunk. And he openly turned around to me, which was a turning point, I think, in my mindset, and said, if I'm honest, I don't think it would matter if you were adopted or were from a donor. We would still be the same. You would still be my son. I would still love you. Your sisters would still be the same and everything like that. So to hear that from a man that I look up to a lot in life, was a bit of a turning point for me in a positive way, I would say. Yeah. There was nothing to be scared about in the end. But.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, it's a huge leap of faith often. But Kieran and I and yourself, we are all living proof of once you open up, and it's, you know, it's a bit too, it's almost glib just to say, oh, men just need to open up. That's the only thing that's stopping us from healing. It's not. It's one of the most important first steps. And just look of like how much of a relief it was for you to do that with your parents and work as well, which we've mentioned, and presumably with your partner as well. And you know, it just helps everything, doesn't it, when you're not shut off and burying your head in the sand?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you've mentioned two big moments in your, I'm going to say in brackets, journey, which involve communication. One to your own dad, and one to your employers, which both set you at ease. You know, even though the thought of doing it can be fearful. Actually, those conversations are so, so important. We've talked about it a billion times and we'll talk about it again. You know, talk about it. It's the most powerful tool, I think, we have. So yeah. In terms of, you know, we've talked briefly about your kind of your emotional response to it all and how you felt going through it. How did your partner react to your diagnosis, and was it different from yours?
Yeah. I mean, I think she could tell that I was taking this pretty hard initially. I mean, she works in mental health and everything like that, so she's pretty clued up on signs or patterns of any route that somebody's going to go down in with their mental health. But as a result, she's incredible when it comes to situations like that. And she's often a pillar in her family and my family and friendship groups. When people are struggling, then they tend to lean on her a lot. She's this incredible woman who's just like a ray of light in a dark situation at any time, and always you feel like you can go and talk to her openly about anything. Interestingly, having said that, when I first found out, I closed myself off to everyone, including her. So, which wasn't the best thing to do, far from it. You know, she was part of the journey just as much as I was, or is part of the journey just as much as I am. And it wasn't fair for me to treat her that way, I think, and to close myself off entirely, because she deserved to talk about it just as much as I did. She's been positive about it the entire journey. So I probably wouldn't be in the position that I am now without her. So
amazing. Yeah, she sounds like an incredible woman.
That she is.
A ray of light.
Yes. It makes it so much easier when you've got that strong partner next to you to catch you when you're falling, because you know we do fall, us men. And it's important we've got someone there that can bolster us up when we need it. It's, you know, I remember being young and thinking, like, real men stand on their own. And it's like, no, you don't. Real men lean on people when they need it, and then get back on their own two feet. But it takes time, and everybody's different, aren't they? But it's amazing to hear that, you know, you've got that strong emotional relationship to keep that solid, because it's so important.
Yeah, definitely.
Has the journey and how it unfolds, has it changed any like relationships in your life? Yeah, in terms of friendships, and you've talked about your parents, and in some ways I look at that and say, well, that's made that stronger in some ways, because you've had a bond interaction with your dad that maybe wouldn't have happened if you hadn't have kind of experienced this. But in terms of friends, how have they responded? That's if you've told them. Right, you know, that's another side of the coin, isn't it?
It's happened at the time that obviously people our age are trying for babies and trying to have families and everything like that. So the age old question of whenever you get a family gathering or go to friends, and is, well, when are you having kids then? And it's like, you know, that's an arrow through the heart when you're going through this journey. And part of that goes down, I think, to the point I keep going back to, and it's the awareness. You know, people aren't aware of what's going on, so they think it's normal to ask anybody that. But friends have been hugely supportive again. We've told a lot of our friendship groups, just because it's either come out in natural conversation or they've asked. And yeah, they're all, I mean, a lot of them are probably going to listen to this as well, but they're all hugely supportive, and we've both been very lucky as a couple to have the sort of support group that we've had throughout the whole journey, and the people that have supported us and stood up and have asked the questions and said, how are you getting on, and where are you with it, and you know, but then also backed off if we thought it was a bit too much at the time, you know. So yeah, we're very lucky to have the people around us that we do have around us, and both friends and family, and yeah, we've got some incredible people in our lives.
Yeah, they do sound remarkable, and that's something that I say to guys that I work with, is that if you don't give them the opportunity, you don't know. Like, they just, at least, because I, you know, and I say this from experience as well, I hid it from all of my friends, and I thought, oh, they'll never understand, they haven't been through it. And once I did, and the levels of understanding and empathy and compassion that they showed, it's leveled up our friendship, and it's allowed us all to become more in touch with each other and better friends and on a deeper level. And it is great, because I eventually took that leap of faith and shared it with them. And it sounds very much like yours, in that they received that very well, and they honored that leap of faith by treating it with the respect that, and the consideration that it deserves, because it's life-changing news. It's a life-changing situation that you're going through. No matter what the outcome, you will change as a result, and in some way or another.
Yeah, I think it's that's perfectly put, that it is life-changing. Thinking, for me, growing up, having the incredible parents that I do have, it's always been a dream, or you know, something that I've always wanted, a family, or you know, a little mini me to go to the football with on the weekends, or watch it with at home, or go to the park, and you know, give the support to a child that my parents have been able to give to me. So for that to be taken away, you know, you spend your entire life wishing and hoping for this, and all of a sudden you get this soul crushing news that boom, chances are this might not happen. You know, it's important to have a support or a good support system around you at any time during that, because it can be a dark road, especially if you go down the route of closing people out, I think.
I can empathize with that one, in terms of, that's all I really wanted. I wanted that, you know, I've said it, we did an episode on me, I'm not going to go back through it, but you know, my childhood was difficult, and actually when I went to the counselling and we really unpicked what I was feeling, it was because I wanted to right the wrongs that had happened to me, or kind of give my child or someone's child, you know, however it would come along, the childhood I wish I had had. And that's a big kind of emotional string to pull. And you've kind of described it there, where you wanted to give what your parents gave to you, you wanted to give it to your children. You want to give it to them, I should say. And I can completely understand how that can feel, you know. So it's the fact that you're coming on here and talking so openly about it, because there'll be other guys that are feeling exactly the same way. It's amazing. It's amazing that you've got such a strong network around you to support you through that.
Very lucky. We're both very lucky. Yeah.
I want to reiterate, and pick up on what Kieran just said, but it's important to highlight that you're still in this. You're not talking retrospectively. You're not thinking back about how it was when you went through it. You are still going through it. And that, again, I said it at the outset, I'll say it again, I'm sure, throughout this episode, but it's quite remarkable and powerful for you to be doing this, sharing this right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm more than happy to share it. It's, you know, as I said to you before we went on or started the pod, that this platform that you guys have created is such a wonderful asset to the community, that people that might feel like they're on their own or might not have a good understanding of the situation that they now find themselves in, it's a safe space at all, a place to relate to similar situations that make you feel, even if it's a little bit better about the situation, you know, it's important to have a structured system around you, I guess, to push on past it and process it and hopefully come out the back end of it with what you wanted, you know. Hats off to you guys fully for that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, mate. It means a lot
to us. Yeah, it does. You mentioned letting other guys know they're not alone, and that's not like the umbrella thing for that is the fertility struggles, infertility, however you like want to term it. But it's also letting other guys know that what they're feeling at the time is not uncommon, and it's very normal. I think you've already mentioned anger. Is there anything else that feels particularly pertinent to you that you remember acutely feeling during all of this, the years and years that you've been going through this?
Well, I think initially during the self-employment sort of phase and finding out about this news, I was working in a very high stress environment anyway, and fast paced and now we need you here, we need you here sort of thing. So for me to be dealing with that as well as having this bombshell dropped, it sort of spiraled me out of control a little bit, and that was when I sort of closed myself off from Katie a little bit, and was drinking a lot every night. I went through a very, very dark spell. It was depression. There's no two ways about this, you know. And it was when you first find out, obviously the first thing they say is quit smoking, quit drinking, eat healthy, look after yourself. And my response to hearing this was the exact opposite. And I spiraled and I was drinking a lot. I was smoking, probably eating too many takeaways and not looking after myself at all. So I think it's important that if I was communicating with people or talking to people at that time, that wouldn't necessarily have happened. And I may have been in a better position now to where I am. But it's important to know that you're not alone. There is people out there, and don't close yourself off from the world, because it's only going to push yourself out and be go against you basically in your journey. So reach out, turn it into a positive in any which way, or look for silver linings. Don't look for the dark clouds. So
absolutely, couldn't agree more.
What helped you get out the spiral? You know, because it's a dark place to be.
Yeah, I think you went through something similar yourself, didn't you?
Yeah. It took processing to get out of it, and let alone deal with what I had to deal with when I got out of it. But you know, what was the catalyst for you to change? Your thoughts and kind of what you were doing with your life.
I think it was a processing thing. I could see that it was affecting my relationship with Katie as well. I think eventually there was something that just clicked, and from there I could build on it, or I certainly realised where I went wrong. So I think I changed my work environment. So I went from self-employment to working for a company, which eased the stress quite a bit. I was talking more openly to people at the time. So I'd had the conversation with my parents. As I said, the conversation with my dad was quite a big turning point in, I think, in this part of it. And I was talking to Katie as well. And not only that, but I think from first diagnosis, it felt like I was in a limbo period a little bit. I didn't know. I was just told you're being referred to these people, and I didn't know exactly what was going to happen, what tests were going to happen, what was going to be said. And 8-9 months for your first referral is quite a, or for your first appointment, is quite a long time to be in limbo. And I think it's only natural that people will obviously feel a bit lost and push themselves down into that dark spot. So communication is important, and I think ultimately that's probably what pulled me out the other side. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, it's definitely a powerful thing, isn't it? It's good, like, oh, it's obvious, mate, but it's amazing to hear how you've pulled yourself out. And you know, I'll say it from experience, you know, it's tough, but it's definitely worth it, you know, because there is a silver line in the cloud. You know, the clouds only hide the sun for a certain amount of time. They do clear eventually if you can stick with it. So it's good to hear, buddy. Yeah. We've talked about a lot. I feel like we, I could genuinely sit and talk to you for hours, Matt. Like, this is, it's been such a, it's been a wonderful discussion, and I kind of almost feel like we've kind of just touched on the outskirts, so we could really kind of get into a load more. But obviously we're conscious of your time and the length of people listening sometimes, because we could, me and Sean could talk for hours. So kind of wrapping things up, we always had this outgoing question. So the outgoing question is, if you could give one bit of advice to any man going through or facing infertility or going through a fertility journey right now, what would be the bit of advice you'd give him?
Quite a big question, that one. And there's so much advice you can give people, isn't there? But, and so many different things that I guess you wish you could have done throughout your journey, maybe in hindsight now. But I think the biggest one is to talk to people, to not close yourself off, to communicate with people that might, even people that haven't been in the same situation, but let your feelings be known and tell people about it, and tell people the journey you're going on, because it's the only way that you'll process it. Or certainly it was easier for me to process it through talking about it. So yeah, communicate and don't close yourself off from the world.
Yeah, man. Amazing bit of advice. Something I would 100% echo all day long. It's been a real pleasure to have you on, bud.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I want to thank you for reaching out to us and offering to come on, because it's truly powerful and incredible thing, and you'll be helping so many other blokes who are going through this. So thank you.
It's only fair I repay the favour that you guys did for me, you know. So been a pleasure to be on, and thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at the Mouth Deleted Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.